the Power, Patti Smith, Bruce Springsteen, Michael Stipe on stage at Democracy Now!'s 30th anniversary celebration in a rare joint performance, along with the Nationals' Aaron Dessner, Alinda Segarra and Hooray for the Riff Raff, and Patti Smith's bandmates, Tony Shanahan and Jesse Paris Smith. Visit democracynow.org to watch our full anniversary event, including Bruce Springsteen's surprise performance of Streets of Minneapolis. On Saturday, Bruce will perform at the No Kings Rally in St. Paul, Minnesota, along with Joan Baez. She'll be there with Jane Fonda and others. We'll be broadcasting more of our event in the coming days. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Earth Day is around the corner. Celebrate with KBOO at our Earth Day tree planting open house, April 22nd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mingle with other Earth-conscious radio heads, enjoy snacks and drinks, and become a part of KBOO's roots. That's April 22nd, 11 a.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, for KBOO's Earth Day Tree Planting Open House.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
Albums this year and is nominated for 4 Grammy Awards. Performing Join Ice, ladies and gentlemen, Jesse Wells.
Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll make you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kinda tough, I put a kid in cuffs, I zip-tied a lady to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down, I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. I got picked on in school, I never felt that cool, there's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the ladies turned me down and I felt like a clown, but will you look at me now, I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, for respect and power, join ICE, I hear they got great hours. There's a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Look at them go. if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll make you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. See, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice? Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE.
This is Jacqueline Keeler, and it's 8 a.m. on Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, and you're listening to 90.7 FM KVU, listener-supported, community-powered radio. So I'm your host, and today on the show, today on Wednesday Talk Radio, we're diving into a major shift at the Department of Homeland Security. Just 2 days ago, the U.S. Senate voted 54-45, to confirm Mark Wade Mullen as the ninth Secretary of Homeland Security. He replaces Kristi Noem, who was abruptly removed by President Trump earlier this month. And Mullen is, if you don't know, he is a Cherokee citizen, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And if you don't know this, but the Cherokee Nation does not require blood quantum. All that is required to enroll is that you have an ancestor on the Dawes Rolls, which is one of the rolls that they took of the citizens of the nation in the early 20th century. And so so he does meet that standard, and so he is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Although I think that even Trump was a bit surprised by this. Let's play the audio of Trump at Mullen swearing in. You got the audio on that?
I didn't know that, huh? Let me look at you. Well, I think that's all right. Only Native American. I didn't know that, huh? Let me look at you. Well, I think that's all right. He's got great quality, I can tell you. He's the only Native American in the Senate. How many have been there before you, do you know? Native American?
I think three.
Three. Well, you're a fantastic representative. Mark Wayne has also been a fantastic advocate for our cherished tribal communities. He's now the first member of the Cherokee Nation ever to serve as a member of the cabinet. I didn't know all these things. I would have picked him faster if I had known. I would have made a quicker decision.
Yeah, so there you hear Trump at new DHS Secretary Mullen swearing in and saying that he didn't even know that Mark Wade Mullen was Native. And for those of you that don't know what he looks like a blonde white man from Oklahoma. So, Mullen is a former plumber turned senator from Oklahoma. He was sworn in, I think, just a couple days ago, and by Attorney General Pam Bondi, just yesterday. He was voted in 2 days ago when he was sworn in yesterday. During his confirmation hearings, we saw two very different versions of this man. On one side, his supporters, including Democratic senators like John Fetterman, and I am disappointed in this, Martin Heinrich, we're used to Fetterman kind of going off the rails and being sort of loving the Republican line. They praised him as a pragmatic negotiator and a steady hand for an agency that has been in turmoil. But on the other side, there was intense friction. Senator Rand Paul, notably the only Republican to vote against him, raised serious questions about Mullen's temperament, even bringing up past instances where Mullen challenged witnesses to physical fights. You can look that up on YouTube. It's pretty insane. He was also the one who was hiding, if you don't remember, during the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol building. He was hiding from later. He later, first he was praising the Capitol police, and then later he was advocating for the January 6ers and their right to beat up and traumatize the folks who were protecting him, right, when he was hiding behind his desk. So, we really want to look today at a few things. I did put it, I don't know if I have started a KBU Facebook page for actually for my Thursday show, but I do include notifications when I'm hosting this show. I have been doing it twice a month on Wednesdays, on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month. I posted about this on the Facebook group, E Pluribus Unum, which is the name of my Thursday show. It's also a call-in show at 8 a.m. And this is the show's the native face of federal enforcement. And so you have to realize just how strange this is to have this man who is a Cherokee citizen legally. Of course, he is very white. But to have him in charge of basically a Gestapo organization, you know, conducting, you know, breaking every law, and it's just insane. This is the man whose ancestors walked on the Trail of Tears, or at least one ancestor walked on the Trail of Tears, and he is the face of it, right? And he is in charge of this. What is he going to do when the elections come and Trump is now sending? If he's sending ICE right now to the airports, but what is going to happen if he sends them, and it looks like he will, send them to voting booths, you know, what's going to happen then? And so, I'm just going to read from the Facebook post. Mark Ray Mullen is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. He's making history, but at what cost to sovereignty? You have not been very good about this, and we'll go through this a bit in more detail. It's the contradictions of a tribal citizen leading the very agency responsible for modern day removals and the militarization of our borders. Just let that sink in a bit, right? And he's a tribal citizen, but now he's leading an agency that is removing people based mostly on their skin color. And he has actually been confronted about this, and we'll discuss his response. And this is the militarization of our borders, right? And so we'll be looking at the Jay Treaty on the border. If you're not familiar with the Jay Treaty, it's a 230-year-old treaty, which is supposed to allow, in the northern border of Canada, to allow tribal citizens to basically travel across the border unimpeded. However, it is not very well respected, and I can tell you that my husband's family, they fought against the Americans during the Revolutionary War, and they lost their homelands in upstate New York, and now they are on the Canadian side, and they have had issues with trying to invoke that treaty, and so I will talk a little bit about where Mullen will come down on the side of this. And also the McGirt legacy. If you haven't heard of the McGirt case, that was a case that determined, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and Gorsuch, although he is a Republican appointee and is not great on many issues, he's the first Supreme Court justice to have any knowledge of Indian federal law to ever sit on that case. Most of the justices don't know anything about Indian federal law. And, of course, Scalia was famous for saying that he just made up as he went along, right? And so he didn't bother to look at precedent. But McGirt basically said that the Muscogee Creek Nation there in Oklahoma still retained jurisdiction over their tribal lands there that were their original reservation when they were removed there. When it was Indian territory. And so this has had a huge issue in Oklahoma of jurisdiction. And so we'll look at Mullen's track record in Oklahoma and whether he will defend tribal jurisdiction, which has been an issue with ICE detaining tribal citizens. I think I wrote about that last month in the San Francisco Chronicle, what was going on in Minneapolis with my own Dakota people there. Or will he basically become a bridge for state-led overreach and on Indian land? And then also we're going to look at the money. He has a lot of fossil fuel giants like Coke Industries. his own stock holdings and defense contractors like Raytheon, Amazon. And so he definitely has a lot of investment and interest in the further militarization and the use of violence and terror that we see going on all around us and overseas as well. And also we're going to look at the Portland sort of angle on this. How is the urban indigenous community here in the Pacific Northwest responding to the threat of increased ICE deployments and the recurring nightmare of federal acts, of federal disappearing acts? So and my question to your audience, to all of you listeners, is representation progress if it's used to shield a colonial system and a very violent one at that? And so please do call in. What are your thoughts on Secretary Mullen's confirmation? Do you see his tribal citizenship as a bridge for sovereignty for tribes, or do you view him primarily as a Trump loyalist who will, execute Trump's agenda? So the number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And just call and let us know what you think of our first tribal citizen, Cherokee citizen, who is a cabinet member and is basically going to oversee what could be a really horrific experience of violence that's going to continue definitely into the elections. Mullen has promised to restore morale and to build a department that runs, quote, on systems, not personalities, right? Well, I think there's one personality we know that's running all the systems here in this country right now, and he has been a loyalist to that personality. He's going to probably, in executing Trump's agenda, he will definitely bolster ICE operations. And of course, right now we're looking, we have ICE agents in the airports. As our TSA agents are not being paid, and the Republicans are fighting every effort to get them paid. If it doesn't include giving yet more money to ICE, which is one of the most highly funded military groups in the world at this point, or whether Mullen will double down on these aggressive enforcement tactics of his predecessor, the disgraced former governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, which I've mentioned before. And I have a YouTube video up of my interview with the back during the pandemic when everyone was on lockdown. The tribes in South Dakota were not allowing random people to come through their reservation land because South Dakota did not require any vaccination or any sort of protective, no mask, nothing. And so they weren't allowing them to come through the reservation. She was trying to force the tribes to open up their borders to allow these people to come through. And so tribes were conducting checkpoints at their borders, and she just went crazy about that. She definitely wanted us to get the germs, that they were carrying and the virus. But she was actually basically banished from 9 of the reservations in South Dakota, including my father's reservation, the Yankton Sioux Reservation. So I did an interview with one of the tribal leaders, Sherman Frazier. He was then the chairman of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. And you can see that on my YouTube channel. So these are the folks we're dealing with. And you can see the ties, estranged the ties between Indian country, where they're talking about South Dakota with Noem, and with Mark Wayne Mullen, a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. It's almost, I feel like, it's sort of a take on sort of the ways in which the oppression is conducted in our out on our reservations. So this is sort of where they're getting the people who know how to do this, and so we just see a tie there in some ways. Please do call, and it's pretty quiet out there. The number is 503-231-8187. And just let me know what your thoughts are on Mullen's confirmation. And So let's take a slightly closer look at this nomination. So Mark Waite Mullen is the second Native, oh, actually he's the second Native American, sorry, to ever serve in a presidential cabinet secretarial role. He is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, and he carries the same membership card as 450,000 other Cherokees. And the Cherokee Nation grew a lot, I have to say, when they got rid of Blood Quantum, and is actually always neck and neck with the Navajo Nation, my tribe, which I should say is composed mostly of full bloods, but the Cherokees, of course, some leaders of Bill Flow is 1/1024th, literally. And I know that Blood Quantum does not mean anything, but when you are 1/1024th Cherokee and the rest of your background is white, white families have enjoyed every privilege in this country, how do you think this colors your perspective? And you know, does this play a role in Mullen's adherence to Trump's ideas, you know, an attraction to them? This is for Indian country. Certainly, this has been, it's hard in D.C. for tribal leaders and tribal organizations that have to lobby before Congress to be, they have to be circumspect. They have to be diplomatic because they are going to Congress and to the Trump administration looking to maintain funding for the programs in their tribes. They often service the most vulnerable members of the tribe. And if you have ever looked at any statistics on Native American income levels, you will see that they are the lowest, we have the lowest per capita income levels in the country. If you don't include self-identified people in the urban areas who we don't really know the nature of their claims. If you look at actual tribal members, enrolled members, the income levels are the lowest. There's no other group that has a lower income level than Native American tribal members. There's none at all. So they are there to try to make sure that these things are available for their tribal members. And so they often, they hold their tongue. They don't say things directly or publicly. So the National Congress American Indians have, called, Mullen's nomination a significant milestone for representation. Some kind of milestone. I don't know if it's quite what their tactful statement says. Seems to imply. And then Cherokee Nation Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. has even called Mullen a friend. Right? Mullen is a powerful figure. He is a senator. There are only 100 senators in the country, and they are amongst the most powerful legislators in the world. Principal Chief Hoskin says that Mullen understands that tribes are sovereign governments. I don't know, that seems rather muted in some ways in the description. I've mentioned this before with the case of Senator Warren, who made claims to be Cherokee, and actually then Chuck Hoskin, who was then the Secretary of State of the Cherokee Nation, he went on CNN on Jake Tapper's show and really was quite cutting about her use of DNA and the way in which it undercuts the sovereignty of the tribe. And the tribes are sovereign nations, and they make the rules as far as who can be members. And Principal Chief Willa Mankiller who got rid of the Blood Quantum rule and basically went to descendancy from the Dawes rules. There is another federally recognized Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. I hope I don't mispronounce this. Katela tribe. Cherokee Nation that they still require 1/4 of Blood Quantum. And then there is another Cherokee Nation in North Carolina, federally recognized, which is called the Eastern Band Cherokee. So the Cherokee Nation, though, in Oklahoma is the largest, and this is the one that Mullen is a citizen of. And um, Senator Warren, I was told by tribal leaders on background that they cannot speak out against the senator because that senator can actually basically put a hold on bills that tribes want to see passed, and the tribal leaders would never know what senator did that. It's completely secret, and so they have to be very nice to these people. And please feel free to call in. Love to hear what you guys think of it. It's pretty quiet out there. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. So as I was sort of indicating earlier at the top of the show, that representation is not always the same thing as alignment, political alignment. If we're looking at Mullen's voting record, it's definitely, there's a lot of contradiction there. He is in some ways an advocate. He has pushed for advanced appropriations for the Indian Health Service, arguing that tribal health care shouldn't be a political football during government shutdowns. He has also been a vocal supporter of tribal food sovereignty and self-governance in rural Oklahoma. But at the same time, he is highly partisan, for the conservative side. He holds a 90% lifetime rating from Heritage Action. He has often voted against broad social spending bills that many tribal advocates support, and basically argue they just simply enlarge the federal government, the big government issue that so many Republicans have. And then, with the issue of his, Principal Chief Hoskins says, he understands tribes are sovereign governments. However, his record on the McGirt decision, that's the landmark Supreme Court case affirming tribal reservations in Oklahoma, has not been one of full-throated defense, let's put it that way. He says he respects sovereignty, but he has often basically prioritized state-led law enforcement solutions over exclusive tribal jurisdiction. And if you're not aware that the jurisdiction issue at the state level is quite a bone of contention. States don't like it that there are sovereign nations within their borders and that have jurisdiction that supersedes theirs. And there's always been a bone of contention and a fight, a legal fight that often goes to the Supreme Court. And we have a caller, Arthur, you are on cable. Arthur, you're on KBOO. Did we lose Arthur? Okay, I think we lost Arthur. So do call back. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Call back. The number here is 503-231-8187. Getting back to the Department of Homeland Security, I wanted to get some reactions. NPR actually did do a thing about Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, and there were some interesting, because this is where Chuck Hoskins says that he treats tribes with respect. There are 575 federally recognized tribes. The Department of Homeland Security oversees also disaster relief under FEMA, and that can be a very important issue for tribes. I saw that on my dad's reservation, on the AGC reservation when it flooded back in 2019. And this is where he calls up a friend. He says, I've had different roles in the government of the Cherokee Nation. He has different roles in the Congress of the United States. And so over the years, we've developed a relationship, and I would call him a friend. Angelique Eaglewoman is a member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate tribe in South Dakota. So I actually did meet her last week. I was in Minneapolis for a conference, and I got to meet her as well. And she's also consulted, but she has nothing to. That's another component of contention is like what he would actually do for tribes. And So, but looking at the Department of Homeland Security, for border tribes like the Tohono O'odham, their concern is, of course, stopping racial profiling of Native citizens by ICE and Border Patrol. If you don't know about the Tohono O'odham, they are in southern Arizona, and their reservation, their traditional lands cross the border, so they go into Mexico, and they have communities, villages on the Mexican side of the border, and then they have a reservation, a federally recognized tribe, on United States side. And I don't know if the villages on the Mexican side have any sort of federal relationship with the Mexican government. I know that we don't really have indigenous communities in Mexico, and these are communities that are separate from the larger mestizo communities. I understand that they don't have quite the same political status that tribes in the U.S. and Canada have vis-a-vis their governments, the federal governments. And so when Mullen was asked point blank during his confirmation if he would ensure that Native people aren't stopped and harassed simply for their appearance or names. And of course, being stopped for your appearance, for being brown, is, of course, you know, the Kavanaugh stop. That's what Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh, let's hope he's never Chief Justice, Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh, that was his ruling or his argument that, yes, you can stop, you can do profiling, racial profiling, because, you know, that person might be, might not be legally here. And a lot of Native people, of course, look just like our relatives across the border in Mexico or south of there, and we get stopped. And I've covered that before with the Navajo Nation, but Navajo is being stopped as well in previous episodes of this show, and also the Thursday show. But, so his answer was that Mullen's answer was he appreciates sovereignty, right? But he reaffirmed that his primary job is to, quote, secure the border. So we have a caller, Tamsin, you're on the line. Good morning.
Yeah, cartographers without borders. Maybe we need cartographers without borders. That's a
I like that. Is that a group?
Without anything else now without. Okay. Where were we? 1,024th, did you say?
Yes. Yeah, I got that number from a Cherokee genealogist, who had done. They don't keep track. They don't publicly talk about their because they don't. It's not required to enroll. But a friend of mine, David Cornsilk, he told me that some of the leaders. That's how low the blood quantum is.
Okay, because that's quite a fraction.
Yes, it is, because they've been intermarrying since the 1700s.
I'm 1/4 French and 1/4 German and 1/4 British and Norwegian. Okay, so that's what I am, but. But I'm wondering now if you really wanted to get it, if I or anyone, should I break it down into provinces within countries, right? I mean, people are very proud to be from Burgundy or Normandy or any other province.
Those are
historically sure
very different places.
Yeah, same in England, right? So if you really want to get, you know, into this genealogy thing, which I don't, I think we should just accept that we're all interesting and different people and we can learn from everyone we meet. That's what I do.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with, people with low blood quantum, because tribal citizenship is not based on race. It's really, you can be of any apparent race and be a tribal citizen. It's, the tracking back to an ancestor who was a member is because you're looking at political relationships. So, and actually there are people who have when the Cherokees were removed, on a Trail of Tears by Andrew Jackson, some of them wanted to remain behind because they were married into white families, right? And they actually legally signed documents basically giving up their Cherokee citizenship, because it's just like giving up your French citizenship when you become an American citizen. And they gave it up not only for themselves, but for all their descendants. So those people can't enroll. And so it's a political status. It's just like any other form of citizenship. And certainly I think that diversity is really important within tribes, but what we have, there is an issue that is sort of very different in that we have the issue of white supremacy and white privilege, and that our communities are not the predominant communities, even in our own lives, right? It's the American system that is predominant. And so when you bring in people who have had so much privilege in their tree, I mean, comparatively speaking, you know, a white pioneer would have a lot more privilege, you know, and if your tree is composed, you know, what is that, you know, a 1,000, 1,032nds of people who enjoyed these privileges, well, that does mean something, you know. And I'm actually working to develop a privilege quotient for trees. I've been doing a lot of research on ethnic fraud, on self-indigenization. And what I see in those trees is like, wow, these people really, you know, I mean, they're descended from nobility sometimes that came to the colonies. They're descended from, you know, people who were quite wealthy, some of them, you know, like they had, because when you look at the U.S. Census, you can tell because they, a lot of U.S. Censuses in the past do have their income, and you can see that they're where they're living. If they're living on Park Avenue and they have a maid, you know, an Irish maid, and you know these people are wealthy, and yet now they're claiming to be Indian, right? And so it's, you know, there's people with very different perspectives on what America means. On even, you know, they can perform the identity, right, and talk about, oh, wow, it's so poor, you know, but it's not been their family experience. And I think that does need to be taken into account. And I think that the nomination of Mark Lane Mullen, or that, you know, the confirmation of Mark Lane Mullen, who is now going to be in charge of ICE and Border Patrol, right, really kind of highlights this issue, because not to say that a full-blooded Cherokee citizen can do that, but yeah.
When is the last time anybody has not been confirmed, no matter how sour they?
Oh my God!
Really?
Yeah, I mean they only get two Democrats. The Dems were held pretty tight. It was just Fetterman and Heinrich, right? Heinrich from New Mexico. And then, of course,
yeah,
you know,
Manchin,
there was a Republican.
Thing, you know, Sinema and Manchin.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to require only actually one to cross the line because, you know, with Rand Paul, voted against him.
Anyway, my last point is I think that they wanted ICE agents in airports. That's what I think. It's part of a plan. It's not a new thing that just happened. Okay.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to, you know, Trump doesn't seem like the most strategic person in the world, I should say, but yet he seems to fall into these strategies, and maybe it's the people around him.
Well, somebody. It reminds me again of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where someone is asking, at the time, this man named Zaphod, a two-headed president, ex-president of the galaxy, keep in mind. And she said, but Zaphod, you were the president. Why didn't you do something? He says, oh, dear, don't you know? The president is just a figurehead to distract attention away. Oh, he has no real power. He's there only to distract attention away from those that do.
That is so accurate. Oh, my God, that is insanely accurate.
Yeah, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, it's a joke. Don't panic is its basic motto. It's right on the cover.
I read it years ago, yeah. No, but that is so accurate to our present situation, sadly. And, yeah, and right now it's still like a wag the dog situation with in Iran and stuff.
Making peace, yes. Peace. We won't let go.
Yes, definitely. So, and but yeah, that's you know, looking at his his McGirt takes, you know, so Mullen has described the post McGirt environment as a quote bad situation. And so, as I mentioned, you know, it's McGirt basically gives jurisdiction to a lot of, because Oklahoma was originally Indian territory, right? And then you have the folks that came in and the white folks that came in were given just to have a run on the land and start taking up land, and then they basically deconstructed their reservation lands, right? Their jurisdiction of them, and so what McGirt did was that it expanded, you know, the ruling was brought by the Muscogee Creek Nation, and its effects do include the other tribes there, which are the Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Seminole, and Quapaw, basically making nearly half of Oklahoma Indian country, jurisdictionally. You know what I mean? Those were returned land for them that was allotted out and bought by white people. But it does give them jurisdiction. And so this is very threatening to states. States don't like this at all. And so Mullen, you know, he's the senator from Oklahoma before that he was a congressman. And you know, most of his voters are white Oklahomans, right? And so he does describe McGirt as a bad situation with and citing a severe shortage of police investigative resources, I guess, from the tribes. And that he notes that federal and tribal courts are not prepared for the massive influx of cases previously handled by state courts, creating a chaotic environment similar to the Wild West in some areas. You know, I have to say, just from my experience, interviewing folks from the Cherokee Nation and covering stories that apply to them. Of course, I am not from Oklahoma, but I do have to say that I have a lot of confidence in their ability to really to grow their courts, their jurisdictional system, to meet the need. There are other cases where this has occurred with the Violence Against Women Act that passed in 2015. They did put in there the ability for tribes to basically create courts, to develop their courts and training in order to be able to prosecute domestic violence cases on reservations. Most of the time with reservations, tribes only have jurisdiction over folks who are federally recognized tribal members. So if you are a citizen of any federally recognized tribe, any of the 574 or so of them, you go to any reservation in the country, and that tribe has jurisdiction over you. If you are not a tribal citizen, a federally recognized tribal citizen, the tribe does not have jurisdiction over you, and the jurisdiction then goes to the federal government. So that's where there is a difference. So what the VAWA amendment did was it basically expanded the jurisdiction of the tribal courts to include folks who are in relationships with tribal members who are committing domestic violence. And it's a rather limited scope, right? But there are efforts to expand that scope as well. Because of the gap in the jurisdiction, the federal government was not great. The FBI was declining to investigate. And, you know, if you ever saw the movie, that Scorsese movie about Osage women being murdered for their head rights, for their oil rights, in early 20th century Oklahoma, the FBI, I guess, was actually founded to investigate murders of Native women. But they were declining to basically, I think it was from a 2010 congressional report on the Department of Justice that found that they were declining to investigate like over 70% of these cases. And so these people knew, allegedly even in prison stuff, that they could go to Indian country, to reservations, and commit murder and rape and get away with it because there was no... The tribes had no jurisdiction over them, and the federal government was not pursuing these cases. So there was what is called a jurisdictional gap that left Native people, especially women, vulnerable to violence in their homelands. You know, and it's just crazy to think that if I went back to my reservation, I would have less protection against being assaulted by a non-federally recognized tribal member than I do here off the reservation. So his description, I don't know. Mullen also highlighted the ruling, the McGirt ruling, effectively bankrupting affected tribes and has strained the little, yeah. So he seems to be trying to take an edge there that it doesn't really support the tribes. Anyway, so the other element is local perspective for Portland here in the Northwest. It's in February, this was before his nomination, I guess, or his confirmation. The 50 affiliated tribes of the Northwest Indians, called ATNI, Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians. It's a major group here in this region that represents collectively the tribes and their lobbying efforts. And so it represents tribes across Oregon, Washington, Idaho. They passed a major resolution in February, and they didn't just voice concern. They demanded DHS and ICE respect tribal territorial sovereignty, right? They reported militarized agents entering treaty lands to search and interrogate tribal citizens after refusing to accept tribally issued photo IDs as valid proof of citizenship. And that is very common. I mean, tribal ID, photo IDs are one of the IDs that are accepted for many things, including, getting your proof of who you are to the DMV, all kinds of things. But often when you try to use them, people don't know what they are, and they don't realize that they are actually valid. And I was talking, when I was at the conference last week in Minneapolis, I was talking to you folks, and they were telling me, when they fly, they often insist on using their tribal ID. Just my cousin does this too, but just to try to, and it always adds time onto their getting through TSA because they have to show it to their manager, foreman. They have to basically figure out what the heck is this, and so it's hard to get that recognized, and the training, of course, is not great. The resolution is about protecting tribal citizens and communities from U.S. immigration and customs enforcement. And it was put forward by two tribal councilmen, Teresa Sheldon, and advanced to by the Lummi Nation in Washington State. They had concerns, tribal reports and concerns about militarized ICE officers improperly profiling tribal citizens entering tribal treaty and reservation territories to stop, detain, search, and interrogate tribal citizens and community members, and rejecting tribal citizens' tribally issued photo identification. And so these activities have deepened fear and anxiety in tribal and urban indigenous communities. And so they, ATNI, which is mentioned, the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians, right, they passed a resolution to, quote, help ease those unsafe and unhealthy feelings, de-escalate rising personal and political tensions, and keep all tribal citizens and community members safe from harm. So, that is where they call on federal law enforcement aid efforts to basically respect tribal treaties and reservation territories. And so, also they cite the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which emphasizes the contribution of the demilitarization of lands and territories of indigenous peoples to peace, economic, and social progress and development, understanding, and friendly relations among nations and peoples of the world. And they also cite Article 31 of, it's often called UNDRIP, the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, quote, provides military activities shall not take place in the lands or territories of indigenous peoples unless freely agreed with or requested by the indigenous peoples concerned. And governments like the United States, quote, shall undertake effective consultations with the indigenous peoples concerned through appropriate procedures and, in particular, through their representative institutions prior to using their lands or territories for military activities. So that is the question: tribal citizen, Cherokee tribal citizen, Mark Lane Mullen, now DHS secretary, will respect that. I will have to wait and see. And I am not hopeful, honestly. Maybe these relationships with tribal leaders, like Principal Chief Hoskins, Rob developed with him, may hold sway. I don't know, and. So there have been tribes, of course, like the Red Lake Nation of Minnesota, the Oglala Sioux Tribe, They've all passed resolutions that's also banning ICE agents from entering their reservations without explicit tribal consent. And there have been disturbing reports. This was back in February, I think, where a number of Ogallala Sioux tribal members were picked up off the streets in Minneapolis. The Ogallala Sioux tribe is in southwestern South Dakota, but there are tribal members who go to Minneapolis to try to, you know, get a better life. These people were picked off the streets, I think they said four of them, and then taken to the ICE, being held in detention at Fort Snelling, which I wrote about. Fort Snelling was, of course, also where Dakota people were held in a massive concentration camp in the winter of 1862 to 1863, after the mass hanging of Dakota men at Mankato, Minnesota, 38 plus two later, which is the largest mass hanging in U.S. history and was approved by President Lincoln. You know, he did not even hang Confederate leaders who had committed treason, and these Dakota men were rising up because their people were starving because the treaties were not being honored, and they were hung as traitors to the United States government. I kid you not. And even to this day, there are federal laws that are on the books that make it illegal to be Dakota in Minnesota, which is our homeland. You know, my father's tribe is in South Dakota, but those are our western lands. Our homelands were in southeastern Minnesota. That's where our villages were. And but we are literally, I mean, they can take body parts and get it. You can get a bounty if you give it to the guy. It's still on the books. That is still a thing, right? The violence is never really, it's abated. It's become more invisible. But now it's once again showing itself in a very visible way. And But the Ogallala Sioux tribe, it was confusing. There was a statement issued by the tribal president saying that they DHS had asked them, DHS had said they would give them information on the tribal members being held in detention in Minneapolis in exchange for them signing immigration agreement, right? Basically telling the tribes that, you know, we will only tell you where your people are being held, but only if you help us enforce federal law on your reservation land, right? And so that is obviously a violation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, Article 31. And then there is the citizenship issue. You know, we were made citizens, not necessarily at our request, because we are citizens of our own nations, right? And we're regarded as aliens until the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924, right? We're regarded as aliens to the United States, even though it had encompassed us, not the other way around. And since that Citizenship Act, all Native Americans born in the U.S. are citizens. And yet we are seeing a rise in cases where tribal citizens are being detained because ICE agents, empowered by recent rulings allowing broader racial profiling, don't recognize tribal IDs or assume indigenous equals undocumented. So we are still facing that violence today. And I've detailed on these shows previously what happened to a Dakota woman who was held, Sophie Watso. She's also, her father is Abenaki, from Odinak in Quebec, the Odinak Reserve. And she was violently detained and released from Fort Snelling, the very place where her ancestors were held. And thousands of Dakota people were held there in 1862, 1863, and hundreds died. And then once the spring came, they put them on boats and shipped them off to South Dakota, to where many live now, the Crow Creek Reservation in central South Dakota, not far from Pierre, the capital of South Dakota. And so that's why so many of Dakota people are not in Minnesota anymore. And it's ironic because that now Minnesota, of course, has agreements with the tribes that remain in Minnesota, but they won't have any dealings with the people they threw out, which are the majority that are now reside in South Dakota and have to deal with ridiculous people like Kristi Noem as their governor. And so that is a historical pain that has not gone away and continues to be felt by our people. We're almost to the end. We have only 6 minutes left, so I got kind of going away on different tangents there. But if you do want to call in, please do. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jacqueline Fuhrer, and we have been discussing for the past hour the confirmation of former senator from Oklahoma, now Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. And he is also a Cherokee citizen. And does this mean anything for us? What is it? I mean, how did we get to this point, honestly? It's shocking. And, you know, when we talk about sovereignty, you know, and of course it is the sovereignty of the Cherokee Nation to choose to enroll him. I just don't know. It doesn't seem to be panning out the way we hoped it would, which inclusion should mean, a consideration of the harm that these policies create for brown people, for black folks. I mean, you see what's going on with the Somalis in Minnesota, and of course a black American man was murdered in Los Angeles over New Year's as well, and it's just astounding. And yet Trump, as you heard in the audio clips at the top of the hour, he didn't even know that Mullen was Cherokee. He did not know. He was reading the script and did not even know and said it on air, like, oh, I didn't know you were Cherokee. I would have, nominated you much earlier for this position, you know? And it's just the way in which our identities basically are serviceable for a really violent white supremacist settler colonial project that's ongoing. And it turns these political identities that are always troublesome and problematic to a settler state. The continued political existence of Native nations is not something they want. And in fact, when I did go to the UN several years ago, a lot of tribal leaders told me that the fact that tribes as nations are not sat at the UN is an ongoing problem, because it means we can't be heard. We have to go through the settler states that have subsumed us, like the United States and Canada, to be heard. I guess my thoughts, and I will write about this more, definitely check out my Substack newsletter. It's imaginatively called Jacqueline Keeler's Newsletter, and that's the most clever name in the world. But I'm going to take a look at this, at Mullen's confirmation, and sort of, is this what we meant when we talked about sovereignty? You know, I mean, when tribal leaders and folks like my grandma's cousin, Brian Deloria Jr., the historian, when they were fighting for tribal sovereignty in the 70s and to make it a thing, I guess maybe the cynical ones would have saw this coming, right? I imagine so. I'm thinking of my grandma's cousin, Sam Deloria. He definitely would have saw this coming. But there was this dream that representation might really mean protection for the vulnerable in our communities, recognition and a restorative justice, truth and reconciliation, those policies that they have, those kind of commissions they have going on in Canada, that they may actually come to that by coming to the table together not extinguishing or erasing the existence of our peoples. And we use terms like nations and sovereignty. And of course, those are not necessarily perfect words to use for this. These are words that we have to use to be understood. But legally, they are meaningful. We are sovereign nations within the United States. Does it mean this? Does it mean having the head of a pretty horrific agency that's going to be conducting a lot of suppression of votes of brown and black people, of of violence and trauma to even children? I think I saw a report coming out from ProPublica about how many parents were separated from their children, and other reports on just the level of trauma to children in being held and being deported, and some of them even died because they lost members of families that had been split up and died over because they lost access to medical care or caregivers. It's just been horrific. And that a Native American, a tribal citizen, would be overseeing this apparatus, he just makes a joke of everything that we've tried to achieve. And that's what Trump does. And that's what folks like his Bannon, this is what they're... I think they get a thrill out of doing this, taking these things and turning.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Love KBOO Community Radio and its mission? Step up and apply to join the board of directors. KBOO's board leads the station, shaping its future, representing member voices, safeguarding its financial health, and sustaining the independence of community radio. Every KBOO member.